Okay, here we go. We are recording, and we'll post the recording online a little bit later today. Congratulations and welcome. So, according to Chad at the election administration or the election administrator, the vote will be certified next Thursday. And so today we are meeting as a group of citizens. And then after next Thursday, we'll be meeting as a board of commissioners. So really glad to have everybody and looking forward to today. A couple of things that I wanted to cover today, and so why I asked you to come in. I want to introduce the department heads to you so that you can get to know them and get to know a little bit about what they do and what their departments do. And I've also asked them to talk about any kind of major needs that they have, because we are only about 3 to 4 months away from starting the next budget cycle and starting work on the next budget cycle. And so I'm probably a little bit different from some of the past people in the position in that I don't hesitate to ask for money. And I'm not quite as thrifty maybe as some other people are. So I will, a lot of their needs, the things that you hear today are things that, I'll be asking you for as we get to the budget cycle. The other part of the agenda is that I want to discuss some of the items that are going to come before you on October 1st. We have to go through a lot of organizational items, and so I want to sort of roll through those. I didn't want to like dump those on you all at one time on the 1st without having a little bit of background on them and why we need to do those. So we'll work through that, and then we can go over anything else that's of importance that everybody would like to talk about. Before we start, I do want to tell you that I've talked with Mike Talent at MTAS, and he is willing to conduct an online Zoom-type overview of the manager commission form of government, just sort of walk through the charter and all the different responsibilities. The dates that he gave me that he's available, and he can do a daytime or an evening meeting. It's whatever works for you. He can do this on September 22nd or 23rd, which is next week, or he can do it on the 29th or 30th. The following week. If you could look now, that would be great. If not, later today, if you can shoot me a note and just sort of let me know which of those dates and time frames work for you so that I can let him know. 22nd, 23rd, or 29th and 30th, 30th. It's going to be about a two-hour session, so he can do any of those four dates. He can do daytime or evening time. So if you want to do morning, afternoon, or 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening, he can do any of those. I'm gonna skip on, and we can come back to that if we need to. He also told me that MTAS every year hosts something called the Elected Officials Academy. This year, that is a completely online thing, and it will be in December. On Tuesday and Thursday evenings. He has already registered everybody, but if you're not able to attend or not interested, just let me know so that I can tell him so he can free a space back up for someone else. And he'll have more details about the exact times and all of that kind of stuff coming, but that'll be by Zoom also this year. And then the other thing I needed to talk to you about is, as you know, we had to do voting here earlier this week because of the issue at the rec center. Chad has asked that we conduct early voting here for the November election. So that would be October 14th through 29th from 9 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. every day. We have a little bit of concern about parking, about building security, some of those types of things. As you can imagine, we have the police in the building. I talked with Chad and asked, are there any other alternatives? And he indicated that it would be very difficult to find any other alternative. The schools have lots of concerns about people coming in and out. The schools are definitely open for election day for the one day, but a 2-week period is a totally different thing for them. And I believe that now for elections, they try to avoid using churches or other religious type institutions, which I understand that as well. So that's something that has been asked that we consider. I've talked to the chief about it. Not super fond of the idea. but we certainly want to be good partners with the county. So I just sort of wanted to get your thoughts on any thoughts that you may have, and you don't have to give those today if you want to take a day or so to think about it. But we want to be good partners for the county, but we also want to be respectful of what the operations are here and what our needs are as well. So anybody have any initial thoughts?
Would it be possible to do it all in the front and not have to utilize the back at all?
So the election commission, what they were concerned about were the lines and the wrapping, and so they wanted to be able to control that, keep people inside out of the elements while they're in line, and they determined that the front would not, coming in the front would not allow for that. So yeah. That's why we had actually set up for the front to be used, and when the election commission folks got here, they made us change it to the back door.
The early voting seems like, would there ever be that kind of wave of people that would require a massive line?
So what he said was that early voting in Nolensville typically draws about 800 people per day, and we had 800 people on election day. So if you can just sort of imagine that same crowd on a daily basis, particularly toward the end of early voting, the last 3 or 4 days or so, that's when they really experience the larger crowds.
Is there a projected date yet for the
ref
center to be open?
It's my understanding is it's probably 3 months or so away. They're having to take out all of the flooring from the rec center. They had suffered significant damage there.
Either here or what?
Right now, they don't have an alternative at this.
So they're not at all willing to consider a church that would not be open for any other purpose.
So the word I got was that they would prefer not to. I can definitely sort of push that a little bit more if we would like to do that.
I think that might be a better option.
Okay.
Here in Nolensville, just there are lots of options that we could, go and talk to for that, and I think it'd be safer for everybody.
I'll definitely give it another shot and let y'all know. I'll tell them, it's just we doing a 1 day thing is one thing, but doing a 2 week thing is a totally different,
right.
Totally different thing.
Have it at the brewery and have a boat and get a beer on the way out. Like half off beer special,
right? I'm sure Wheeler's ready to
go. Wheeler's and Brothers, and every day it switches to new.
Okay, I gave everybody a packet. So the packet includes some stuff that we'll talk about today and some stuff that we won't necessarily go over today, but you should have a set of ordinances and resolutions, which we will go over during this meeting. You should have a copy of the Manager Commission Charter. MTAS sent this earlier this week. They will be providing bound copies at some point pretty soon, but they wanted me to get that distributed to you today. You have Corey provided us with Robert's Rules cheat sheet packet, so that's very helpful. And you have also from Corey a summary of the Open Meetings Act or the Sunshine Law. So that will be very helpful to you as well. All right, if everybody's ready, I'm going to recognize our department heads, have them come. We need to get through this by about 10:15 or 10:20 or so. But I'm gonna have them come up one at a time and tell you a little bit about their function, whatever else they would like to talk about. So, if I can find... I didn't print myself an agenda, so who's first? Montique is first. Thank you.
I wrote a few things. That'll be quick. They'll probably talk to me more than anybody. It looks aside from Donald and maybe Corey. Monty.
Monique.
But I'll answer to Monique, whatever I'm used to it, I'll still say hi. But it's Monty. Used to say rhyme with antique, but I don't want to say that now I'm getting older. So anyway. I'm the town reporter. I'm the official record keeper for the town, which makes me responsible for the custody preservation of the records. My job is to provide you all with administrative support. So if you need anything, just call me. I can set up, schedule your training. I'll work with finance to make sure everything gets paid or anything like that. So I'm here for you if you need me. I also help you to draft ordinances and resolutions. Donald's also great at that. And Corey, if we're not comfortable, we'll reach out to her to help us with those. I manage the adoption of the code. I attend all of the Board of Commissioner meetings and the Beer Board meetings, and I prepare minutes for those meetings. I work with the town manager to set the agenda for meetings, work sessions, and I assume we're still going to do work sessions and workshops. I prepare document packets, and I'm trying to move to electronic, so that's why I have the iPads out. You can bring your own laptop if you want, but gonna try to get rid of all of the paper. I will print out certain things, but sometimes the packets are hundreds of pages, so we're gonna try to move from that. I consult with Corey, who's our town attorney, to review contracts, resolutions, and other documents. I maintain all public records, and I work with department heads to get any requests for information to people in a timely manner. I facilitate all the applications and renewals for beer and liquor license. And I do collect the beer and liquor license fees. And if they do not pay, I'm responsible for suspending them. So I draft, I post, and I publish all the legal notifications of the meetings. I also help with the website, the calendar, Facebook, and Twitter. And when I get a chance, I write grants. So that's what I do. Any questions?
Thanks, Monty. All right. Corey is with us today. Corey, I'm going to put you on the spot for just a minute. Introduce yourself and tell sort of what the duties of a town attorney are.
So, hello, I'm Corey Jones. I am an attorney in Columbia, Tennessee. I've been serving as the interim town attorney for about 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. I was elected by the BOMA, by the mayor, and then y'all will be choosing a town attorney some sort, me or someone else, in October meeting, probably. So as a town attorney, my job is to look into legal issues, make sure that you're complying with the charter, just to help you operate within your realm, basically. So you receive that charter, you also have a municipal code, and those things are, the charter's your constitution, the code is your collection of laws, basically. And so I help you do your legislative function. That's really what my job is. Like Montique said, I review some contracts if necessary. I will look at your ordinances and make sure that they are, they would comply, and make sure that they are passed the way they're supposed to be, look at notices and things like that. So really my job is whatever you make it, but I'm here to help you operate within the city manager commissioner charter.
Vivian, where are you, Vivian? There you are, back in the corner. Vivian is with Municipal Court.
Yes, so I am the court clerk. Our department consists of 3 employees currently. Myself, the assistant court clerk, who will be retiring in about 3 weeks, and the judge. Judge Peterson has been here with us since 1999. He also has experience serving as the city attorney for Fairview, who also has a commission form of government. So he is full of information and knowledge. If you ever get a chance to sit down and talk to him, he's great to talk to. Our job is to process the citations that the police department writes. It includes a lot of data entry, assigning traffic school, conducting trials, collecting payments, processing failure to appear, suspending driver's licenses, reporting to the state, various filings like indigency and appeals. most importantly, customer service. Nobody is ever happy to be in my department. But we try to help them and let them leave a little bit better than they were when they came in. Due to COVID, we've switched over to Zoom trials. They're going great. The judge has been really happy with them. I think he plans to continue that even after COVID. Our greatest need would be updated software. We're doing the same data entry into four different programs. So updated software would help us be a lot more efficient.
Do you have a particular software that you've researched that you know would work for you?
Tyler Technology.
Okay.
So it is the very last item on that list of ordinances and resolutions. It's actually the last two that we'll get to in a little bit. Vivian is awesome, and she does a great job down here. Thanks. The police department, they probably don't have a whole lot today. No, I'm kidding. Come on, Roddy.
How much time we got? I'm Roddy Parker, Chief of Police, have been almost 3 years now, next month. So, obviously I'm responsible for the operation, management, supervision, all the functions of the police department. So, right now we're in the best shape we've ever been in. We've had really good support from the previous Bowman as far as financial, and we have myself and 13 full-time employees, with the one that was just approved the other night. That does not include the administrative assistant, and we have four reserve officers, which are volunteers. They don't receive any pay or benefits, but they serve a important function, especially during our special events. Of course, COVID has knocked most of those out this year, but you know, Buttercup, July 4th, Veterans Day parades, we couldn't make it without their additional manpower. So. Really important part of the department. Our biggest challenges right now are, kind of piggyback what Vivian says, technology. I think I've shared that with a few of y'all. Our reporting software is antiquated, not very user-friendly, doesn't interface with any other type of functions that we do, so it's something I'm familiar with. It from the sheriff's office, had it many years ago, and have moved away from it. And most agencies have moved away from it because there's just better products out there. Some other quick notes on the technology front. We are. May or may not be familiar with that BOMA gave us money for new body cameras here a couple of months ago, and those are supposed to be delivered within a couple of weeks. But along that same line, we need to upgrade our in-car cameras so they will be compatible with the body cameras. So we have a THSO grant that will have access to October 1. That will pay for part of those in-car cameras, but we need to look at building out the rest of our patrol fleet with this updated technology. So the ideal is that both cameras being integrated, you turn on one that turns on both of them at the same time. And when the officer pulls into the building here, that the data will wirelessly download to the cloud. So it's hands off, and there's less chance that something gets lost or messed up. So,
do you have a roundabout number on how much?
I can give you a
additional.
I give you a roundabout number of what I've all talked about here. So,
okay.
And the interview room where we interview victims, witnesses, and suspects, it needs to be recorded. Right now, we just set a body camera in it to make do. But it needs to be more professionally outfitted with video and audio recordings. And that whole thing that I just talked about, Derek, is probably in the $120,000 to $150,000 range. Staffing, I'll give you.
Does that include
maintenance of that body camera footage? Because all that's open record. So how does that fit into our...
The... We will be charged per unit, per month or per year. I can't remember right off the top of my head.
But that's in this, or is that separate?
That will probably be, that will be a recurring expense. So yes, so right now it would be about $3,000 a year. But once we tack on the in-car cameras, we probably double that, about $6,000 a year. That's cloud storage. Yeah. So talk about our staffing a little bit, and in this packet that I'll give you, you can look at it later on, there's a staffing study that we did in 2018, and the numbers supported us having five additional officers. We got two the 2019-2020 budget year, fiscal year. We asked for the remaining three this last year. Of course, COVID got that, and then the BOMA restored one position. So according to our staffing study, we're still two bodies short. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And as I said, the staffing study will be in here to kind of explain that, how we got to that number. It is the same formula that the International Association of Chiefs of Police uses for staffing studies. I think MTAS uses it as well, so I didn't just make it up. A important note on staffing, I think this is significant here. So in the year 2018, we responded to and were involved in 12,558 total incidents. In 2019, we were involved in 15,934. Now, part of that is due to we got more officers doing more stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also more of a demand on the department. So, and these are numbers that are recorded by the Weems County Emergency Communication System. This is not something I fluffed up or anything. It's the numbers that they record. So. last but not least, I think Donald touched on it earlier, the town hall security. Overall, we are very vulnerable here. Staff, officers going in and out, the hate towards government in general and police specifically here worries me, because even if I've been over at 2 o'clock in the morning and look up and there's somebody walking through our back parking lot. So it's very unsettling to people to be able to get that close to you and you're not expecting it. So we need to come up with some ideal of controlled access on the front during business hours so people just can't wander up. I know Don and Coe's, that somebody's angry all of a sudden in your door. It's kind of unnerving a little bit. So, but even we need to do maybe a perimeter fence around the back to control access back here and a gate. I think, Kyle, we're pricing that out, right?
Yes, we're in the process of working on that. Yeah. Unfortunately, what we're running into is a lot of company staff are short right now. It's very difficult to get responses back to inquiries like that. So it's been an extremely slow process, but it is something we're working on.
So in the big ticket item, for future thought and ideas, I know we're, everybody's looking at the fire department needing the building and city hall needing more space. And so at some point with the expansion of the police department, we're going to start thinking about another facility for us. So that'd probably be a 5-year deal at the very short end of the stick, but something we need to start thinking about and planning for the future expansion operations of the city in general. So does that make sense? You guys got any questions of me? You got my cell phone number? You can call me anytime. I'm used to being woke up in the middle of the night. Sometimes if you need me on the weekends, it gives me an excuse to get away from whatever life's got me wanting to do.
This is being recorded.
Yeah. I've been known to even fake a phone call at times.
Thank you.
finance. Let's talk about money.
Yes, you guys can hear me better. So traditionally, finance has kind of worked in conjunction with HR, operating really as one department. It's become more and more evident in audits and, you know, even just the direction we're going with growth, that that's not going to be sustainable. Having a dedicated person to each department separately is definitely going to be beneficial to the town going forward. So for this purpose, I'm going to focus on our financial functions in our finance department. I'm going to have Missy kind of follow up more with our HR components. So some of our essential job functions include all of our planning, organizing, and directing operations in areas of accounting, finance, budgeting, support and reporting, information services, and purchasing. What that entails, maintaining our GL, our general ledger and financial reporting, managing our accounts payable, preparing and maintaining our town budget, reconciling accounts, cash management, coordinating our annual audit, coordinating with contracts and tracking our grant funding, our monthly reporting, just our routine month-end deliverables, analysis and trends of our expenditures and revenues, our preparation and filing of quarterly taxes, and ultimately ensuring that we stay compliant in with federal, state, and local regulations and financials. One thing that's kind of become more and more evident for me as I kind of get into this role I've joined a few months ago is our lack of tools and technology today. It's kind of been a roadblock for us. Our software does its job, but bare minimal. And so being able to get us in a more efficient software platform that works for everybody, that would get us to be able to produce and generate the type and level of details and reporting that we would like to be able to communicate would be beneficial going forward. We run into, you know, we're able to produce the reports today, but on the back end, it really is like layers and layers of manual work that ends up being very time consuming. And we would like to be able to focus our, reallocate our time to other initiatives going forward, especially as we move towards a capital improvement project. And, you know, today we don't have a 3-year, 5-year outlook or projections, and that's going to be a crucial component as we move forward. So software, I think, is our biggest need that I've come across in our department. And I think, you know, not just our department alone, but really for the town, it would be beneficial. One of the really cool features, actually, I think Donald might have mentioned it in his weekly town update a while back, is a priority of his is an open checkbook. And so in kind of doing some research with softwares and what's out there and what they have and what they're offering, that feature, I think, is going to be a great communication tool for us going forward and building and keeping that trust in the town and how the money is coming and going. So, you know, we certainly are hopeful and look forward to being able to provide that kind of services to people who are interested and want to manipulate the data to see it. If you're not a numbers person, you can change it around and view it in graphs and charts and however, you know, you read it best. And we're always looking for areas of improvement and trying to get as much information as we can on our website so people have it at their fingertips to look at as they move.
What do you use right now and what do you want to use?
We currently use Assist, and actually I think we are probably the only ones in the state of Tennessee that use it. I don't know any other municipality that uses it at the moment. We've sat through a few demos and, you know, just all of us together kind of sat through. One nice feature is that, I wouldn't even call it too nice, but one great thing is that we all are on Assist, so it all integrates very smoothly. And so we were looking at what softwares are out there that would work that same way, that we can get everyone on the same platform that would integrate and we wouldn't have to worry about any kind of drop of information. Tyler was one of them that really kind of stood out, worked for a lot of people. We got good feedback and sitting through some demos. And just a lot of the things that are very manual for us today really are silly things that should already be automated and streamlined. Right. And just getting us there would be definitely beneficial going forward.
Y'all are talking my language with software. I support improving our software.
Yeah. Did anybody else have any questions or?
Not yet.
More to come, I'm sure.
Yeah.
One of the things Christina and I had talked about a few weeks ago was the weird tradition of adopting the treasurer's report every month, and then sure enough, one of the candidates for these seats pointed that out, that we don't need to be doing that. We had already planned to stop doing that, and so starting with this board, she will still present that report every month, but when you adopt a treasurer's report, you are essentially attesting to the accuracy of that. We believe that they are accurate. We are not going to present you with inaccurate information, but really that is not the proper way to go about doing things, I don't think. You will adopt an audit every year, which is proper, but we will put those reports on just as we do all of the other committee and department reports, and Christina will be there and be able to answer any questions about it, but we don't need to adopt that every month. We need to just look at it, ask questions about it, and then move on.
Okay, great.
Okay. All right, thank you, Christina.
Thank you, Dan.
Misty loves public speaking.
Okay, so I'm Misty. I do finance and HR. My main duties is payroll, administering the employee benefits, onboarding of new employees. Recently started trying to develop employee training, as well as assisting the finance side to help maintain our internal controls. And like everyone else, I'm going to piggyback off of the software. I could give a lot of arguments why we need it, but our biggest is payroll. Everything's manual. We use spreadsheets. It's subject to their entry error, manipulation subject to my entry error. I start on Mondays. Sometimes it can be Tuesday or Wednesday before we get it complete, trying to verify information or even collect timesheets. And so with the addition of the fire department, that's going to increase our workforce by 30%. And the time that will take, and then being off-site, just trying to collect all these timesheets, if we could just get a good software for timekeeping, less entry, our reporting. Again, it's you have to pull three or four different reports just to get some information. By moving to a better software, it could free up papers. I don't know if you guys walked around our thing, but we're running out of space. We don't have anywhere to keep any more records. So with the new software, we could also free up some of the paper needs.
Yeah. Does the Tyler Technologies platform that you guys have looked at include
it
this?
It does.
And does it have a good platform that you've seen that would work for this?
It does. It seems to, like the record keeping, as far as like timekeeping, virtual onboarding, which I don't know if I plan to use because I kind of like that face-to-face with employees, but again, with the fire department, it could come in real handy.
Mm-hmm.
They can pull their check stubs off of there.
Sure.
It's just a lot, everything's at their fingertips. Not only mine, but theirs too from that point. So it seems really beneficial to everybody.
Great.
Got it? So I'll ask this now, just because it could be you or it could be Corey, or maybe we don't have one, but who's our resource as commissioners for human resources related communications? What we can and can't do, what we should and shouldn't say. I could use some help, but it may just be MTS. I may not have a resource, but I'm just asking.
Well, with this charter, the person that's in charge of all, employees and anything employment related will be Donald. It's your town manager. So you don't have any control over employees or anything like
right.
that, if that's what you're asking.
No, I'm asking about me to keep myself out of I don't want to, say the wrong things, do the wrong things. I'm not talking about, something insensitive. That I'm not concerned about myself. I'm talking about communication amongst my peers and communication back and forth, like amongst staff.
I think we talked about maybe doing some sort of training that teaches you more about, what your job is as a commissioner, what you can and can't say. I've given you that sunshine law handout that explains it in like the big picture, but really you can only talk to each other about items that you could potentially vote on in meetings that are published or that are published in the paper and online and that are open to the public. So once you get this email address, that's what I was thinking. Don't be emailing each other. You can email me, you can email any of them, you can email the town manager, but you can't be communicating to each other, whether it's in person or via email. That's really the main thing you can't do. Like your legislative function, so you can still talk to people. You know, you're one vote, so you don't have like the authority to make decisions with citizens, if that's what you're worried about. But as far as talking to each other, save it for the meeting, but reach out to people individually, I think is the answer to that.
Well, I'm sure there'll be more, but that's a good start. I want
to tell you a couple other things that Misty's been working on that I'm really happy about. The first is she's been going back and looking. Some of you may know about a year and a half ago, we had a salary study. Is that right? About a year and a half? Salary study done. We have some issues with it, and she's been going back and recalibrating and doing some work with that, and we'll get back with you on some things in the future. Nolensville should not have been compared to Ashland City, Shelbyville. Those are not comparable towns to what Nolensville is, and their operations are not comparable to what we do here. So she's been going back and doing a lot more research and a lot more digging on that. And so that's something we want to get back in front of you at some point when we feel confident in the numbers that we have. And then the other thing she's been working on, our benefits, I'm just gonna be very blunt, are terrible. I mean, we have some, if you are an unmarried employee working here, health insurance is a pretty good deal. If you are not, it is not a good deal at all. The town absorbs no portion of the family coverage. You have to, well, we do now, we have a small subsidy now, but otherwise we have not in the past. And so she's been looking at some ways to potentially get better health insurance coverage. And our goal, as we've talked about many times, it's called Pareto efficiency. If you're into economics, it's the idea that no one should be worse off.
Right.
We try to elevate as many people as possible, but we don't make anybody any worse off than what they already are. And so that's a challenge right now because, again, for our single employees, benefits are terrific. But for people who are not single, not so much. And so she's worked really, really hard on that. We're trying to work with some third-party vendors, but she's running into the exact same issue that Kyle mentioned earlier, which is so many people working from home, working out of the office, just trying to get responses has proven to be a real challenge. But I do expect to have something in front of you within the next few months with regard to employee benefits package.
If I can just kind of speak to
yes,
that.
Yes, sir.
That one issue has caused me, I can't tell you how many prospective police officer candidates that would have been really good officers and good employees, and when I found that, I thought they would come out. So, it's really cost us more work in the long run than what we end up doing.
Yeah, a good benefits package can make or break you, especially if we're also looking at salary concerns. So,
absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, Misty. I'm going to skip building codes for just a second.
But he doesn't like you.
No. Don's going to cover building codes today, and so I'll obviously he also has to cover engineering, so we're going to catch it all at one time in just a minute. This is Diana. Go ahead,
Diana. Hi, I'm Diana. I have met many of you, not all of you. Congratulations on your victory. I'm excited to work with you guys. You had so much enthusiasm in your campaign, and I'm just ready to jump on that and continue that momentum moving forward. Donald told me I have 10 minutes to talk. I could probably talk for 3 hours. I'm going to talk fast for a Southerner, so here we go. You all, some of you know, we updated our webpage and the town webpage, the planning department webpage. We tried to make it a lot more user-friendly. So now when you go on there, if you want to know, well, I want to submit a site plan, how do I do that? You can click on Application User's Guide, go to Site Plan, and it will walk you through. Step one, do this. And then it will link you to the checklist that you need. And what are the fees that need to be paid? What's the application schedule? All those things are there at your fingertips. And, you know, it's not that big of a deal for our, you know, engineering firms that do this all the time all over the state. But those smaller applications, it should help them understand the process better. But that's just the start. We are moving into an application called Zoning Hub. Zoning Hub is a GIS platform, and so it will eventually be, you can click on a parcel and it will tell you this parcel is zoned village. And then it will tell you what village allows, and then it can walk you through what, you know, it will keep a historical record as well of what's been applied for there, what's been approved. And we're going to join the 20th century and the rest of Williamson County with this, and we'll have electronic submittals instead of these big paper rolls that come in. It's a lot easier. It's a lot easier for me to review because I can blow things up and really look at that detail. So, but it's a complicated, multi-layered program. This is not going to pop online in 2 months. Our goal right now, Joel helps me tremendously, so I'll shout out to him. We are hoping that in December we can accept electronic submittals, and we know there are going to be kinks and mess ups, and that's why we're saying December, because that's usually a slow month for planning, and that'll give us a chance to go, okay, wait, where do we mess up, and we'll fix it. And then we'll slowly roll out the rest of the uses for this app as we feel proficient with the one that we're using, then we'll add that next layer. But that's a building process. Historic district. So you all know about the multimodal grant that we got. We are at the point, Kimley-Horn has concept cross-sections for us to take out to the public. We are meeting with the business owners and the landowners in the district first. That's October 7th. They've been mailed a letter. Well, actually, they'll be mailed today. And then I'm going to go down next week and hand out flyers as well so that they all get notified. If you can't make that meeting, we will have a record of what is said and create a report, and it'll get back to you. Because I know you guys have a lot on your plates right now, and you also have a job probably that means you don't need to be here every day. So we will get information back to you. Anytime we do a community outreach or public, we're going to gather that information and feed it back to you, because that purpose is not just for us, it's for you as well. The other thing going on, I have reached out to our State Historic Preservation Officer, Jane Catone. She's a fabulous resource for us. We are not a certified local government in the State Historic Program, and we need to be. So we're starting that process. She has our ordinance now, and that staff is going through our ordinance to find out what do we need to change, what do we need to add, adopt, what, you know, just what needs to be done. She'll get that information back to me probably in a month or so. And then in January, she's going to come and her staff's going to do some training for our Historic Zoning Commission. This process of becoming a certified local government will take us about a year, but it makes us more eligible for grants. It's just a tremendous resource for training and education. Murals in historic districts, you know, I can call and talk to them. They've dealt with it. They've talked about it. Here's the legal ramifications of that. Here's how it works. So you have somebody to hit that's got, here's what everybody in the state did for this, and it gives you that just tremendous resource for information. So we are working towards that. Did you have a question?
I do. So will this then allow us to have our buildings in our historic district that really is not truly a historic district if it's not registered? Will those buildings be allowed to be registered like in other places, if they fit qualifications?
They will not be part of the National Historic Register. That's okay. A different type of program. But our buildings are protected by, even our historic zoning overlay has design review standards.
Okay.
So they have to meet those. But it's much easier for our board to feel like they have the power and the understanding of what they're allowed to hold someone to, when they've got this state backing and this state education that happens every year.
Okay.
So that's one of the benefits of that.
Can I piggyback on that for just a second? The benefit, as Diana touched on, of the CLG or Certified Local Government process, we did research back in Murfreesboro, and it's something like 80% of historic grants you have to be a CLG to even apply for.
Oh,
so
wow. We
miss out on a lot because we haven't gone through this process.
Yeah, and I think we're one of the few in the state. I mean, if
yeah.
you're going to be a historic zoning district, that's just step one. So that's what we're working toward. I gave you guys the flyer about Community Planning Day. That's coming up October 17th. We are going to try and make that a really relevant day. You all may have participated in the past, you know, where they give you the, here's a beautiful mansion with gardens all around it. Here's a dilapidated house. Which do you like? you know, we're going to try to actually create context so that when the public comes in, they understand what we're asking them. And while this might look good, here's what's going on with this, and you might actually be more for this that looks a little different. So we're going to try and make that really contextual and get genuine feedback on what people think. Hope you guys can be here that day. I don't expect you to stand here all day with me, but I hope you'll have a chance to drop by. I'm going to make one quick just statement about the Planning Commission. So I just want you to, when you guys are going to reappoint the Planning Commission, I have no idea if you intend to appoint the same 9 people, if you're going to create a 7-member Planning Commission, a 21-member, I get no clue what you want to do. I just want to say, as you make this appointment, you are asking these people, I stay out of politics, but I did listen to the commissioners forum, and you made land use a really strong platform for all of you. They have big decisions to make. When you appoint these people, please think of people that you believe are vested in the goals you stated. You're asking them to carry those goals out, and if they are not vested, they're not going to go that way, and then you're going to be very frustrated with me and the Planning Commission. So I'm just asking you, we've got great momentum. Let's keep it going forward.
Not that we've had that experience.
Not that we've ever experienced that in any city I've ever worked for. But I'm not recommending anybody, and I'm not recommending anybody. I've only been here, I think, 6 weeks now, so I can't tell you that the Planning Commission right now, as it stands, is the most fabulous board or the worst. I honestly don't know yet. So this is not a recommendation for or against a single person. I'm just stating, let's really think about the values you talked about and make sure you have people that hold those same values. On that, we are required to do 4 hours of Planning Commission training. The state requires that for planning commissioners. Typically, we would, you know, load them all up, take them to Nashville for a half-day seminar. They'd have lunch and come home. But it's 2020, so obviously that's not happening. And Donald and I talked about that and just felt like this just gives us a great opportunity in Nolensville. I have tailored the training that we're going to do this year for our commissioners. So we are going to have, I've made 4 sessions. They're all about 45 minutes to an hour. That first session is essentially Planning 101. We are going to cover sunshine law, what they can talk about, what they can't, how they conduct meetings. All of that will go on. We're going to go over case studies, you know, what is rough proportionality or essential nexus, and why do you need this information? What kind of zoning do we have? We have Euclidean zoning here. What's that mean? What are our processes? You know, what's the Board of Zoning Appeals do, and what's Planning Commission do? Who owns the zoning ordinance? Well, you guys own the zoning ordinance. Comp plan. Planning Commission owns the comp plan. So then training session 2 is going to be the comp plan, and we're going to go through and talk about what is comp plan. I've got some examples of some other ways to do comp plans, and then we're going to talk about, so Tennessee Code Annotated says the Planning Commission shall, and it's the things the Planning Commission must have in the comp plan, and then the things it may have. Then I'm going to take this comp plan, and we are going to get in the nitty-gritty of it. And I'm going through the comp plan with, here's what the goals state, here's what the objectives state, here's what the principles state. And here's what we heard in the commissioner's forum that we wanted as goals. And it's not here, or it is here, or it conflicts with that. Or this goal is stated, but it's never carried through. And we have a couple of things in the comp plan that actually conflict with what the zoning ordinance says. So we're going to break that down, then we'll do the same thing with the zoning ordinance in training session 3, and then sub-breaks training session 4. My goal is that we get to the workshop, that we're ready to make decisions. Kind of like when I go to put directions in Google Maps, I have to say, here's where I am, so we can decide where I'm going. So this is my, you know, here's where I am for a planning commission, so they can make choices about where they're going. And when we get to that workshop, it's obviously going to include you all. I would love it if you all could come to the training sessions as well. Obviously, that's up to you, but that would give us a good roadmap. When we get to the workshop, you talked a lot about land use. What is priority one? Now that we have a full understanding of what all of our regulating documents say, let's decide what's step one, what's priority one. So that's where we are. I think that's everything I had on my list. My door's always open. Call me, drop by, whatever. Just let me know what you need. And I am not asking for anything because Donald left me in great shape when I took this job. So we're good. Can I answer questions?
Is there a way, as far as Planning Commission goes, not to drag y'all into the politics of it all, but if there are things as we select, you know, whoever picks the Planning Commission, if there are things we should look for in people, a diverse, if there's some skill sets, if there's things that we should look for, we would, I'm sure all of us would welcome your feedback. Don't hold back. Tell us everything you need to know. Don't let us make mistakes.
I do want, there, you mentioned the word diverse, and that's the first thing. State law says for both the Planning Commission and the Board of Zoning Appeals that we should have diverse. Actually, it doesn't say should.
Shall.
Yeah. And we do not have racially diverse Planning Commission or Board of Zoning Appeals. I think you do need to keep that in mind when making future appointments. And I can get you that. I can get you that language. For it reads slightly different on the Planning Commission than it does on the BZA. But that is definitely something that we need to keep in mind. Our boards and commissions, committees, all of these things need to be reflective of the community. And right now, in some cases, that is just not really happening.
That's probably going to be the best way, too, to see this board become diverse over time as well.
Yes.
That's right.
Because you bring people in and start them there. So
exactly.
Yeah.
If you, any of that, because also how diverse is defined is going to be important for us. And if there's diverse skill sets or that kind of thing that we need to look for or put together, if you have advice on how other communities select their planning commission, if there's processes to get people that are great in the community that we may not have even heard of before, I'm sure all of us will welcome every single bit of advice that you can direct our way about that, because you're the one going to be training, working, trying to push together the vision of the five of us for them.
Okay, maybe we can talk about that and send something to you guys on that. Any more questions? Okay.
All right, we're going to get Dawn up. Building codes. We had a minor snafu earlier this week, and so we currently have a vacancy. Don is going to cover some things for building codes for us, in addition to engineering.
I started with the town in 2000. Then I came down here part-time. I was self-employed. Part-time to do building inspections and code enforcement. And over the years, our town engineer quit. The mayor at the time, Beth Lawless, asked me to take the town engineer position. And that was in 2008, so I took that. And then moved into a full-time position. But it wasn't long after that, our building official left. And I had been doing his duties before he was hired. So she asked me to take that on as well. So I wore the two hats for several years. And then we finally hired Mrs. McCoy, who was our past building official. He's now gone, so Donald's asked me to resume those duties in the interim until we find someone new. And so I go over a little bit about my perspective and what the building official is doing. And the bold lettering and main points, he reviews all building permit applications. That's plumbing, gas, mechanical, and building. We don't do electrical. That's done through the county inspected by the state. We don't do educational and assembly uses. Those are handled by the city fire marshal's office. And the only review we don't do in-house is commercial plans review. It's a far more complicated set of review standards, and we hire a contract reviewer to do that. He's also the plans reviewer for Williamson County. So he's certified to do all that. And then with the issuance of permits, the building official oversees and performs all these inspections. And I had my first two yesterday now. I've done inspections for several years. I am still certified in building plumbing and gas mechanical. So I'm able to step in and out of that. We do have a part-time employee who comes down and assists. And he'll probably be doing the lion's share of the inspections to be performed. And the other thing that the codes official has to do is, let me get back up. I said, see the list on inspections. We have a number of inspections that have to be performed. We're going to be permanent. Suzanne Brown, our codes clerk, put together a builder's packet that goes out to all applicants to make application for a building permit. And then this is a list of all inspections. And she has about 20 of them listed. So we're out there a lot at every job site, making multiple visits. So there's a lot of inspections. Say we issue one permit between the building and gas mechanical plumbing. There'd be over 20 inspections on that one permit, so it's quite a bit, especially today we have so many subdivisions and commercial under construction. There's a lot to be done with that. The other thing the building official has overseen is the adoption of building codes. The State Fire Marshal's Office requires us to be current. We're currently not current. So one of the first things we'll be doing is preparing a new ordinance to update the applicable codes here in Nolensville. And we should have that ready by November. And this is something that is mandated. We don't really have a choice. We do have an option in terms of local amendments to these or not codes. We will make very few of those. And that'll be, again, a decision not allowed to be involved in. And then all inspectors are required to be certified. And we have to have a new education and renew our certificates. So the building official has to oversee that for himself and his staff. And then obviously maintaining records on construction projects. We have the same problem as you mentioned. When you go back and look at our files, we have boxes stored in every nook and cranny in this building. It's untenable. It cannot continue. We need to look at microfilming or digitizing our spring storage. If we had all the boxes in here today, there wouldn't be much room for us. And it's getting worse. And the other thing the building official does is enforce the Nolensville Code of Laws, with the exception of those enforced by the police department. So that would be your property standards, your zoning violations, sign regulations, dying grass and weeds, debris on the road. And there's a lot to be done there, so kind of gets me to the needs of the building department. We have an immediate need for two people, building official and a building inspector. We will also need another vehicle. The department currently has two. With three people, they're all out all the time. We need a third vehicle. And I've already mentioned the record storage. Is really something we need to start the process on now, getting those digitized. In addition, electronic submission of our current but also unitizing the existing and getting them out of the parts.
I've got a question.
Yes.
You've got an immediate need for two people, but yes. Is that enough? And I know those are vacancies. Is that really enough, though, to get all the work done that needs to be done by this department? So does that project, you know, what the needs are moving forward?
And are they, I just want to add to that.
Yeah.
Are they vacancies or are they additional needs? I think
one's a vacancy.
One's a vacancy. Okay.
One's a vacancy. We currently have... Well, we had our building official, and we had a part-time inspector. Plus, we have a third individual who is in training, become certified to move into that position. But he also does codes enforcement. And there will be a need in the future for seven individuals, codes enforcement, building inspection.
Okay.
So I say we have two needs. The part-time person also works at Wayne's and Gannon Codes. She's only able to get over here in the afternoons. If we had a full-time person, that would relieve that need.
Okay. Thank you.
And as I said, since I gave it to you.
Thanks, Dad.
I've been the town engineer since 2008. I'm looking to give up the building official position, but not this one. So, as the town engineer, I oversee and manage capital improvement projects, and these are all the big ones, the roadway improvements, and I put in here some maintenance. Maintenance is handled by our public works department. I work with them and provide guidance and technical assistance, and they oversee the maintenance. And in the top of that, I rely upon ASCO, which is the American Association State Highway Transportation Officials. They are the accepted design guidelines, and really everything we do in terms of geometric design really should combined with ASCO, public safety, and public liability. In the MUTCD, you're going to hear me mention this a lot. Yeah, that is a manual on uniform traffic control devices, published by the Federal Highway Administration. It is mandated by the state of Tennessee for all political subdivisions, cities, towns, counties. In the application use of all traffic control devices on public roads. There are some, again, there's three terms in there. Shall, should, and may. Shall, very little discretion. Should, discretion that should be supported by an engineering study. And may, which is permissive. You can supplement something. So you can hear me talk a lot in my role as an engineer about application at the MUTCD. Now, having said all that, I have to do that. You as a elected board, you know, you can choose to put up any device you want to put up. And no, if you do, you may compromise public safety, and you definitely may compromise the public and the town's liability. But the legal boards do it all the time. I think it's ill-advised. No, I'm not going to tell you you can't do it. Just proceed with caution. I also oversee drainage improvements. And again, except maintenance. College guys do a great job of that. Most of it they have hired out. We don't have in-house equipment to do a lot of what needs to be done. So I do assist them with that. And then I also assist in the design and refurbishment of municipal buildings. But again, not maintenance, that's college. So I mentioned that I assist with all that. And then I work very closely with Diana in terms of review, site plans, construction plans, plan unit developments, commercial subdivisions. And there again, I go back to those same design guidelines. Ashland, the MBTCD, the sub-rings, stormwater regulations, and the floodplain regulations. And these are important to point out. Yeah, we have two primary documents to guide development, the zoning ordinance and the subdivision regulations. These are the guidelines that we tell developers when you come in. These are the documents you must follow. Then my role, in Dyer's role, is do they follow those? Is that clear? We don't get to add to that, say, well, we want you to do this as well. It's really beyond the purview of our prerogative to require additional measures. So we use those two documents. If you're unhappy with the way development takes place, change those documents to suit your goals. Because that's what we're going to rely on. Now, I also inspect public improvements associated with new subdivision. Now, we streets, curb and gutter, sidewalks, and drainage. Landscaping is inspected by planning. We take a look at the plan overall, but the role that I play is to assure you that the public improvements are in place. Those are the items that are bonded. I don't get into non-bonded items, trails, unfortunately. But I think it's an important thing. And I don't know that down can bond those, but currently that's not what I overlook. See, I oversee the bond of these items. And as part of that, I do, with the town requires the submission of as-built surveys on drainage ponds. The pond is designed to satisfy our stormwater regulations. We then require a survey to be submitted to us to show that it meets those requirements. That is built through that design. Same thing with our roads. We require approvals. We simply, a loaded dump truck drives over the base material and the roadway before it's paved to indicate it has the structural strength to support the road. And those are all received before we let the subdivision move forward with transitioning from a conformance status to a maintenance status. And all that is when they're under construction or in performance, when they get to a certain level, they get a request now to go to a maintenance bond and maintain that infrastructure for 1 year. And before we allow them to do that, there's a checklist that Joe currently works with that is provided to them and to satisfy those items, then we allow them to move forward to maintenance. And so those are two of the items that I oversee. And the two really big things I do is overseeing and manage the town's MS4, Municipal Seven Storm Sewer System. And that is something that is mandated by the federal government, the EPA, the Department of Interior, down to TDEC, the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation, to maintain water quality within the waters of the state here. Mill Creek is our water body. And the MS4 is designed to prevent pollution, silt, and this fact, mostly silt. There's also chemical pollution, runoffs at different times, runoff from roadways, oil, fuels, whatever it is. And so we maintain this program to prevent those pollutants from getting into the stream, to maintain the water quality. And so as part of that, that's what we do. The disturbance plans and reading permits. And then Joel Cook is employees shared by Diane and I. He performs these monthly inspections on grading sites. And I conduct what are called dry weather inspections. Claire, we have house walls are gone. The occasions where there was storm sewer dumps in the milk creek. I had to go out and redo all those to make sure there's no obvious evidence of pollutants. Motor oil. I found where people have dumped water softener salt in the catch basins. You've got to find that and get that cleaned out. And then we also respond to a lot of complaints about failures and site-related erosion protection, silt fencing, construction driveways. So we really have to ride the air on these contractors to keep these measures in place, working and effective. One of the drawbacks of wearing a mask, again, they're working. And the other big thing that I've overseen is the floodplain regulations and others. We have to maintain the flood insurance rate map here. I oversee map amendments, members to FEMA. And then, if there's any construction within the floodplain, I oversee the regardless surveys and any remediation out. We've had one project building the floodplain since I've been here. I've been here since 2000. And that is the Nolan Corridor over here that was moved in front of the Nolan Corridor development. And it was located from the floodplain into the floodplain. But we didn't require they meet the current flood standards by 3 feet above base elevation, flood doors in the ground space, mechanical equipment out of the floodplain. So that's something that we probably will not do very often. I think it's ill-advised to build in the floodplain, but it can be done under certain conditions, according to our current floodplain regulations. And so, in terms of engineering, with needs, the two critical needs, maintaining funding for the MS4 program. It's a federal mandate, but without any funding assistance, and it's going up every year. It gets more expensive to administer. And so I will be coming to the board, I guess, the board done with funding requests to increase this. I think we're okay this year. I may need a budget amendment before the fiscal year is out, but that remains to be seen. And also, we have one vehicle in our engineering department that Joel drives. It's about worn out. So I will need one vehicle for engineering. And beyond that, I'm good to go. And I haven't answered any questions as best I can.
With regard to the vehicle, Joel has had to be picked up on the side of the road before, so just FYI.
Yeah. It's like that.
Yes.
Me too. I don't have any questions right now. Thanks, Tim. Yeah.
Tell us, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, is it's been a daily part of our lives that, and yours now, that a lot of times questions come to me, like last couple weeks on floodplain questions. Sometimes I know that people are sending the same questions to you and to me, and so it's doubling up on your work for you to have to answer. I need to make sure that they know that we're listening and we're working and fighting for them and all of that, but I also don't need to have you have to answer multiple messages.
And I appreciate it, I'm sure. No, I wouldn't worry about that. I can answer both. I'm cut and paste. It's okay. It's okay to ask me that. I encourage that.
Well, and anything you all can do, I think this, what we're doing right now, is super helpful for people to understand whose role is what and what they're in charge of and being able to communicate to the town. A lot of times, I spend a lot of time explaining that's not the role of the town. It's not even in our legal realm of possibilities, and I am completely sympathetic to you, but it's much, it helps us a lot for you to be the ones explaining. It saves us from having to do that. So every time you do that, and then sometimes we need to know when we do need to advocate, and we know staff, we need more staff. We know we need more staff. So figuring out how to prioritize what staff and where, but teaching us how to how to partner well is going to be really important as we move forward.
In terms of staffing, I should mention that Joel, when he was hired to do the engineering inspections, he then became quite involved in planning issues. It became invaluable. And so he's been a tremendous asset to both departments. But I think there will be a day when we need two Joels.
So well, there's two Joels now.
The new review is Joel 2.0. We will need a third Joel. And then she might come in and
rare when there's one of us. So.
Joel's time is increasingly consumed by bonds. Joel runs single-handedly, pretty much runs our bond program and keeps up with what's going on. And so as the town becomes more interested and more vested in bonding things, that is more and more of his time and less time that he can devote to helping Don and Diana with some other things. And so cities of, 40, 50,000 or higher, you will find they have a full-time bond person, sometimes multiple people who work on those issues. We're not there yet, but working on bonds and keeping up with letters of credit, answering questions, going through the whole process, keeping up with which ones are about to expire, trying to collect overdue fees, all of this kind of stuff, it's this very rolling process, and it doesn't stop, it never stops, and so there's no break from it. And it is, I've just noticed just during the time I started when I started working here in October, it was probably 10% of his time, and it's now a good 30, 40% of his time. So that, as Don said, having an additional person is probably at some point going to be absolutely essential, just because it's not going to take any less of his time. It's only going to continue to build, I think.
And then there's a very important need, and my need, I can't do without. We have to make the MS4 inspection.
Yeah.
It's not an option. And so, we're doing great now. We've all learned how to do more with less. It becomes a breaking point. But we just won't be able to satisfy your needs the way you would like to see us do it.
There's a tremendous amount of trust required on our part of the staff when we're approving things. And Derek, and you've said it, and I've said it, when we get into the meetings and we're releasing a bond, like we're making a vote to release a bond, and we're relying on those plans and the packet, anything you all do to help us understand, because it makes me, I'm relying on a good planning commission, I'm relying on Dawn, I'm relying on those people, I can take those, but I can't go play engineer. It would be a disaster for the town when I could try to. At the same time, I need to be able to, I'd like to have my questions before I even get to that meeting answered so that I know. So again, teaching us how to partner in that communication process and ask those questions, especially so that we can all hear the answers and not one at a time hear the answers, because developers know that we can't talk to each other. And that works against us in getting information, because we each get a separate, and then we get to that meeting, I'm like, wait, what did you just say? I mean, nobody told me that. And then you're just sitting up there trying to figure out, do I make this decision, or I shouldn't make this decision, I don't have all the information I need, but I'm gonna have to wait a whole month, and then I'm stalling somebody whose work is waiting on me. And so that's my desperate cry for any information you give us, especially if it comes to all of us, is well-received, if there's a better process for us to get that information, help us.
I do want to say, go ahead.
Along those lines, so your current inspection process for these bonds and that type of thing, is there a technology need for your team as well? because I'm just thinking about all the other things I've heard. So if we're able to upload photographs and comments and things of that nature that support what's been inspected, I don't know if we're doing that today or if we have that technology that is easy for the person to do.
So let's talk a little bit about that for just a second.
Okay.
And Dawn can correct me or whatever. We rely upon third-party firms, typically hired by the applicant, to conduct inspections,
okay,
to release bonds. These are licensed professional engineers or landscape architects, depending upon what they're looking at, by the state of Tennessee. And their license is on the line, so they have to give us back their professional opinion on what it is that they're looking at. And we rely on it. If we choose not to, we risk, as I tell Don all the time, practicing engineering without a license, which is a Class C misdemeanor in the state of Tennessee. So if an engineer seals something and says it is complete and it is accurate and correct, and then we say, no, it's not, we don't have the expertise to do that. What we can do is we can get our own engineer or hire someone to go out and do that. But we don't have the expertise to do that. That's with a PE, a professional engineer. That's with a registered landscape architect. That's with a registered arborist. All of those individuals with the state of Tennessee. So we rely very heavily on those folks. The other thing I wanted to touch on was the releasing of bonds. Don and I talked about this some time back. The resolutions have been written erroneously. By the time those come to the board, you are not releasing bonds. The bonds have already been released by the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission sets and enacts the bond, and thus the Planning Commission releases the bond. What you are voting on is actually to accept the public infrastructure. And we will revise and rewrite those in the future to make that very clear. The bond is already... The bond is over and gone. What you're doing is accepting. So that's why you have to have a planning commission who you trust and who is on the same page as you, and who understands what your goals are, because they have some really, really, really important decisions that they are entrusted with making.
Yeah, on top of that, I would like to add, we do require those certifications from our engineers. And I still verify.
He's still verified.
I walk every street. I walk every sidewalk. I visit every pond. And quite often, when we do these walks, there'll be a sidewalk section that's broken. Usually not by the developer. Usually by the homeowner moving in with a truck. Or a landscaper. And they break the sidewalk. We mark all those replacements. So I do walk twice every subdivision. Every street, every sidewalk, this is every pond, to verify and make sure nothing's overlooked.
If I could just add this in as well, so I know you're concerned about bonds. One of the things I find going on is I get the citizen that calls me and they're upset that what's going on and this hasn't been replaced and isn't there a bond that covers this? And they're talking about an issue that's not bonded, that has nothing to do with our bonding process, and they're wanting the town to be accountable to something that we're not accountable to. We're accountable to the public improvements that are made, not something their homeowners association decided to do and a neighbor knocked a tree over. City's not going to go out and fix that. But I would say so far, I don't know that I've dealt with an issue yet that wasn't that. So you may hear a lot of, they're just letting these bonds go, and it's crazy, and we are not letting bonds go that should not be let go.
Is there something that we can do as a town, as an educational process, to help everyone understand the differences between responsibilities for the HOA versus what the town itself is responsible for?
Yes, I've talked a couple of times about doing, obviously this comes up, and so it gets talked about at Planning Commission over and over, so that there is that way. But one of the things I've talked about is doing some kind of community roundtable or perhaps even video type sessions with some of our professionals to sort of go over those things and so have, I want to have like quarterly community sessions where we invite the public in and we cover different topics, and I have this group of people there to answer questions and to talk about things that are going on and answer whatever the public wants to talk about. And bonds would definitely be something, and HOA responsibilities would definitely be something that would be right up at the top of the list.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I think that would be very helpful. One last question on this. As far as the applicant hiring their third-party firm, and I know their license is on the line, but do we have any say in, like, let's say we've had, for argument's sake, a bad experience mm-hmm. with a firm in the past. Can we then recommend to that applicant that they seek out a different engineering firm?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just curious if that was
and I would also say, Don can talk about this on the engineering aspects. On the landscape aspects, we have a our own registered landscape architect who is on call, who we can at any time, if we have any issues or questions about a report that we get back, who we can send out at the applicant's expense. That's one thing we haven't done in the past, is we haven't charged that fee to the applicant, and that needs to change. The town does not need to be absorbing that cost.
Okay.
But we definitely have someone we can call to go back and double check the work and
okay.
submit a separate report, and that would be for the town as opposed to working for the applicant.
Right. Okay, great.
I'd like to point out, and then the subdivision regulations, there's a requirement that the engineer record submit a letter to the town stating all improvements have been made in general conformity with the approved plans. That's the engineer who drew them. So that is required that that engineer go back out and inspect the work for compliance with his plans. That is, I mean, you couldn't hire a third-party engineer to do that.
Okay.
It has to be the engineer of record. But on the other items, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Another point. There are going to be many things that are town-related versus HOA-related. But in the event a subdivision is nearing completion, there may be items that are not bonded. But that doesn't mean that we as staff don't talk to the developer
right.
about completing those improvements. I'm talking about signs and lighting and you name it, trails. They may not be bonded items, but it doesn't mean we are not advocating for the completion of those items.
Okay. Yeah. That's good to hear, because there are several subdivisions that don't have their HOA
right.
in that process. So they, that's where I think you guys and probably us will get those phone calls, is they feel their hands are tied because they don't have an HOA to go to, and they don't have a way to contact the developer. So they come here.
And they should. That's who we work for.
Right.
And we've helped, I mean, just during the time that I've worked here, we have helped a number of people, whether it be sort of serving as the go-between between the homeowner and the developer, or actually getting them in contact with one another and then following up to make sure stuff is done. I know I've done that. Don does that pretty frequently. Diana will do that, obviously, as well. So we see that as part of our role, and we're happy to do it. Anything else for Don? Thank you, Don.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, we saved Kyle for the end. Kyle, you have 37 seconds. No. Take as much time as you need.
This is probably going to be a little bit more in-depth than some of our other departments. First off, my name is Kyle Billingsley. I started here with Public Works in August of 2014 as a part-time employee. I went full-time in 2015. And I was promoted to the director position around March of 2019. So I've had plenty of time to see some of the strengths and the weaknesses of Public Works. So I'm going to start off with what our basic job is, and that is everything. So we are the custodians of Town Hall. We do minor repairs around Town Hall if it's something that we can't handle. We have that work contracted out, and that's something that I take care of. We do simple asphalt patching, filling simple potholes. We set up and supervise town events, We take part in the tear down of town events. We set up and supervise road closures while working with the police department. We are responsible for the maintenance of the rights of way, mowing and weed eating the sides of the road, picking up trash on the sides of the road. We're basically we do the dirty work behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know about. So one of the strengths we have is a ridiculous level of flexibility. Between taking care of police needs, we're taking care of town personnel needs, setting up furniture, moving, rearranging offices, going to pick up furniture, delivering packets to board members. That's something we all take care of. We currently have a team of 6, including myself. So most people think there's a street crew and a trash pickup crew, a maintenance crew. They have me dispatch all of these crews out, and it's actually us. So that brings us to one of the weaknesses. We're at the point now with a small team, we're stretched in so many different directions that we don't have the time to spend getting everything done. We take care of the basics, but we're starting to miss some of the aesthetic touches. So what I mean by that is we're usually pretty good with when it comes to mowing and weed eating town hall, but mulching. Town hall has been halfway mulched. It took us about 3 weeks to get that done, and we haven't had an opportunity to finish the rest. Maintaining the Trailhead parking lot, again, we're great with the mowing and the weed eating. We don't pull the weeds from the beds anywhere near as much as we should, at least I feel like. So we have an immediate need for personnel. And now let's get into equipment for that personnel. We currently have a director's vehicle, and then we have 3 trucks. One is a bucket truck. We only have one, so we drive it as little as possible, because if it bites the dust, we no longer have an ability to change banners, to put them up or take them down, unless we use a ladder on each individual pole, which obviously wouldn't be very efficient. So our newest truck is a 2017. It's the only 4-seat truck we have. Our other trucks are 2-doors. And then we have a Chevrolet Silverado that's a 2-door, and I think it's roughly 2006. So mowing the sides of the road, you've probably seen our large blue tractor. It's 20 years old. It's the only tractor we have that has an arm attachment on it. We lose 4 to 6 weeks of mowing every single summer, and we have every single year that I've been here. We either need to replace it, or we need to look at getting another full-size tractor. You're looking at a cost of $100,000 to $150,000. And that's why I included the budget, so you can see what we're working with currently. Our budget this year is $550,000 or so, $535,000. $260,000 of that is salary. So we're looking at less than $300,000 for operations. So we've worked on an extremely tight budget as long as I've been here. And we're at a point where we have to start looking ahead. And I think after seeing the citizens' interest in expanding and offering more services, this is the time to talk about it and to lay the framework for that. So since 2014, we don't offer any more services than we did. And I think that's something that we're gonna have to change. But before we can do that, we have to manage what we have. So that's why I'm mentioning the things that we have and what we need. So we have to move away from a team where we do a little bit of everything. We're gonna have to branch out. We're gonna need a dedicated vehicle maintenance crew. When we start building and developing parks, we're gonna need a park maintenance crew. We're gonna need a town hall custodial crew. We're gonna have to set ourselves up in the way that these larger cities are so that we can have a dedicated crew to take on these tasks rather than a team of 6 working on one thing, dropping that as soon as the next need comes up. We have to be able to spend time getting projects done. So in the future, you can expect for me to be asking for a lot more. When I was moved into this position in March of 2019, I thought it would probably be a pretty safe idea after 1 month to be extremely conservative with the budget. And for the 19 to 20 year, the budget went up 11%. 10% of that was our tractor. 2019, our smaller tractor was the first piece of power equipment we got. So it is not only a tractor with a push off, it operates as a forklift, a mini excavator, and it has a bucket. So that's our one piece of power equipment. So obviously we're gonna have to branch out on equipment as well. And another thing I wanna mention while we're here, which I mentioned this to Donald yesterday, we have another big project that we're gonna have to take on, not us, but I think we're at the point where we're gonna have to get a firm out to review the drainage in the entire back subdivision. If you take a drive down Stone Brook, Dorch, any of the back streets, you'll see that we have grass and sediment buildup. We have grass growing out of the drains at this point, and that comes from 30 years of neglect. We're working with $30,000 a year. It's contracted out. That gives us the opportunity to get four or five drains cleared out, but at that rate, by the time we actually finish, we're gonna have to start right back over. So you're probably gonna be looking at a project in the hundreds of thousands, if not more, in the near future. Are there any questions?
One thing, Kyle, that we talked about is having a kind of a published public works schedule, yes. The striping schedule, the maintenance schedule online so people can see, because a lot of times I don't think they understand what you are doing, and sometimes I don't know what you're doing.
Right.
So
that's something we have added to the town website. Unfortunately, we have to be very vague, a very general timeline of the things we take on. Because so much of our work is contracted out, we're at the mercy of contractors, and it can be extremely difficult to actually get them to follow through in a timely manner. For example, the sidewalk on Old Clovercroft next to the Painted Dragonfly, it's been something we've been trying to get lined up for months. It was supposed to happen today. Today I got the text, it needs to be tomorrow. So you don't want to be too specific on these things, but at the same time, yes, I do feel that it's very important to at least offer some general guidance to the town on what we are working with.
Do you have in your mind, because you mentioned sort of breaking this out into departments, right?
Yes,
and having a team for each area.
Right.
Do you have a plan in mind for what that would look like that you're ready to share with us? Or
if you look in your packet, I have the vision for future growth.
Okay.
That's some of the projects we'd like to be able to take on in the next 10 years. When I presented that in March of 2019, the mayor asked me off the cuff, what kind of team we would need to take that on? And I told him at the time we would need to triple the size of the team.
Okay.
Which at that time it would put us at 12 people. That would be a great start. Had I known what kind of workload that we'd get this year,
mm-hmm.
I probably would have gone up on that. So what we'd like to do is we like to have at least 3 people per team whenever possible. So when I say a mowing crew, you've got a tractor driver, a flag shadow vehicle, and then one person weed eating as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a team of 3. Same with vehicle maintenance. We try to never have one person working alone. So again, 12 people would be a great start in the next few years. But again, as the needs of the town grow, as we get more town vehicles, as we have more facilities, it would need to match that growth.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd love to see your an expansion on the future vision.
Right.
And a little bit more specific on, you know, this year's budget, or maybe with these goals in mind,
mm-hmm.
here's how we get there. This year, it's one hire, it's this piece of equipment,
right.
It's expand this service.
Okay.
Next year, it's you know, 2 additional people and no new equipment, but we're gonna start offering, you know, fixing sidewalks, right? So
right.
I'd like to see kind of the yearly vision a little bit more broken out.
Okay.
Because I'm with you, and we've had this conversation. I want our public works to be able to fix some major base failures.
Right.
Right. So when the major, dip on Clovercroft happens, we don't have to wait a few months, come to the board, get, contracted. Our team's just capable of fixing that.
Right.
And that's where I would like to get to. So I like where this is at. I'd like a little more detail on it, though. Yeah,
sure. That's more cost effective, I would imagine, too, than paying on contractors and contracting it out, isn't it? Yes or no, or is it possibly?
Possibly, you know. Most of the base failure repairs have been lined up by Dawn. I have lined up one myself, actually, under the previous director, and that was back around 2016 on Kidd Road, and that base failure came in at a cost of around $4,500.
Okay.
So, when you're talking about the extra personnel for it and the equipment it would take to be able to do that, eventually it would offer a return on the investment, but it could be decades, particularly considering the worst of our roads have now been addressed, and that's Sunset Road. They're working on Clovercroft, Kidd Road as well. I absolutely think we do need to be there at some point, but right now, when we have the issues we have with the drainage and the other things, it should probably be pushed towards the future rather than sooner.
Okay.
Yeah, I would like to point out that a lot of that work, the actual physical work, and the base fire repair requires very specialized equipment that we wouldn't use.
Right.
A milling machine, a paver.
Right.
Things that we simply wouldn't have in need, a sustained need to justify the cost.
And again, you would be looking well into the hundreds of thousands, I would imagine.
Well, yeah. So I know how much those cost.
Yeah.
But my thought too was, you know, you can get rentals for those and things of that nature. So I'd be curious to see what the cost differential would be if we have the staff that has the know-how.
Exactly. And that would be another issue. We would definitely have to look into training for that as well.
Sure.
We were kind of jacks of all trade, masters of none.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing looking at a vehicle maintenance crew. You know, Adam's fantastic on a lot of vehicle maintenance, but he's not a certified mechanic. So that would be something else that we would need to look into, you know, making sure the people that we bring in already have experience and certifications.
Okay. One of the things that, for your benefit, because it's going to be stuff that you hear because we hear it, why did it take a year for a bike rack to get installed? Why is it taking so long for this small patch of sidewalk to get installed? One of the things that we've run into, and Kyle and I have talked about, Nolensville's a bit out of the way, and when we are calling a contractor with a very, very, very small project like that, as he mentioned earlier, we just get put off. We are very low on the priority list because of where we're located and the magnitude of our projects quite often. So we take a lot of shots for that, and it's really nothing that we have a whole lot of control over. The only thing Kyle can do is work to find better contractors, you know, find people who are more reliable. And we've been working through that and doing the absolute best that we can. But I know it's a lot to ask people to be patient for a year for a bike rack to be installed. We totally get that and we agree with it, but we are at the mercy of people who we simply cannot control.
And are we, sorry, Derek, are we utilizing some of the folks maybe that work in these industries and maybe have a smaller business like that that actually live here that might have a more vested interest in?
Right. So when I go to get bids, you know, I essentially rely on Google at first. As well as monitoring 411. I've actually got screenshots of different concrete contractors on 411 that I'm getting ready to make some calls to. So it's always in the immediate area.
Okay.
Almost all the contractors we work with are relatively small. And you know, for a concrete contractor who has to bring in a truck, they're charged by how many times the truck has to move. So a lot of times what they like to do is they'll wait until they get maybe 10 sections, 10 sidewalk sections within one subdivision. So
we found that out when we were fixing our driveways.
So that can take some time. But for the record, since 2016 or 17, we've had well over 300 or 400 sections of sidewalk repaired. So it is something that it's slowly happening, but it's for sure happening.
Is that why, you know, with the striping schedule, you know how we saved different jobs on the same day.
Right, and mobilization fees.
Sidewalk repair schedule, if you haven't kind of, you knew, I mean, obviously different sidewalks break at different times, but if you knew we're going to be in different places, you know, if there's
right.
a schedule to it, does it save money?
It does, for sure. The less the concrete truck has to move, the cheaper it is for the contractor, which means the cheaper it is for us.
What
but
about?
If we know of a defective condition, we have a responsibility
Absolutely.
To, I mean, it can't just be about aggregating all of the sidewalks. We still have to address it.
Right. So as soon as it's brought to our attention or something we see, we go out and mark it immediately with fluorescent paint as well as cones. So it's not sitting there unaddressed. There is the obvious effort that we've made to alert walkers.
Is there any opportunity, the county, I know, has some capabilities. I don't know exactly what their services are, but is there any opportunity to do almost contract with them, some, you know, recurring annual cost we pay for them to do a certain level of, you know, sidewalk repair? Or
I have not
whatever.
Contacted them about sidewalks. We have in the past asked them for help with road work, and they have been able to. The last few times I've contacted them, it's been a situation where they have so much going on their own,
sure.
they're not able to offer us assistance.
Okay.
The town does have an ongoing intermodal agency agreement with the county highway department for roadway repair. But as Kyle said, for the last two, almost 3 years, they've not been able to assist us do that work. And they would do that work at their cost.
Right.
They didn't make a profit, if you will.
Right, right.
But even their cost, we can contract them about the same price.
Okay.
They probably already see it, but I know, Derek, I appreciate your response. Like, if I text you, you're on it, and I've always appreciated just how responsive you are, and that helps a lot. It makes
a lot easier. At this point, I'm still spending anywhere between 50 and 80% of my time out in the field as a regular public works employee, at least during the summers. So if something urgent comes up, always shoot me an email. I have email on my cell phone, so that might be the quickest way to get a hold of me as well.
Okay.
And that's another thing that's not sustainable. As we grow, I'm going to have to take a step back and take more of an administrative role, so I would need to be replaced with someone else as well.
That would sound like it's probably the most immediate need, so that you can
right.
oversee really everything that's going on.
Right. As well as equipment and vehicles to get our
right.
team around.
Sorry, most immediate staffing need.
So for us to know to connect committees with you,
right.
because the work each committee often adds work to you they don't know. Like, I think about the trailhead.
Exactly.
They didn't put water in there,
yeah.
and how it adds so much work to you that if we just have been coordinating, you
right.
wouldn't have to do so.
And this is an issue that's a lot of it came up prior to me. The last public works director, I don't think, was very involved in meetings either. And it has definitely set us back in multiple ways. So we definitely need to work to where the public works director is almost purely administrative.
Anything else for Kyle? All right. Do you want to take a break, or you
in
want to
my
just,
mind.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent.
Thank you.
Everybody back here, we're gonna work through these ordinances. You are welcome to stay or to move along, whatever you'd like.